5,000 individuals are murdered without regard to gender, socioeconomic status, religion, race, or geographic location, each leaving hundreds of grieving survivors. This tape by Mary Wong, herself a survivor and nationally recognized expert on homicide bereavement, brings you into the world of the homicide survivor. She discusses the psychological, emotional, physical, spiritual, and financial challenges survivors face. Unlike other types of bereavement, you will learn about the intricacies of the criminal justice system, the frustration, helplessness, and overwhelming feelings of being out of control which survivors feel, all in an effort to help you better understand the length and scope of their grieving process.
I'd like to start off by giving you a little background on who I am, what has happened in my life, and how I got involved with this. I've been involved with homicide since the murder of my stepdaughter in 1984, in July. It was a beautiful, sunny day, and my husband and I were planning our wedding. His second child, his only daughter, she was 11, was missing overnight and found face down in a stream in Long Island in New York. To put it mildly, having all the wedding plans intact and for this type of tragedy to happen to us was totally beyond my comprehension. I went from the very peak of happiness to the depths of despair overnight. How I learned about it was amazing because I spent the majority of the second day when she was missing trying to find my husband. He was with his family, trying with the police to find her, and they finally located her in the middle of the second day. She had been beaten above the face and above her neck, chest, and in her head, and she was bruised. Her clothes were in disarray. She was found face down in a stream, not far from her home at all. And no one seemed to know how she got back in that wooded area. What's happened since that time has been a very difficult process in trying to cope with that tragedy over the last 12 years. This past July was 12 years for us. Now, to some, that may seem like an exorbitant amount of time to try to grieve a death. But the problem with homicide is that we need to deal with the criminal justice system and their interference in our lives, not just the police and the district attorney and the trial and the plea bargaining arrangements, but we're also sometimes dealing with media. Angela's picture was on the New York Post, the entire cover. And during those next few weeks, her death, her murder, was linked to many other murders of girls that looked very similar to her. And they thought at first that there was a serial killer. So we continued to see her picture in the paper for weeks and months after the fact. The media came to the house of where Angela was living at the time with her brothers and her mom, and sat in front of the house for weeks looking for someone to come out and talk to them. And my husband says to me, often he wishes that he had gone out and used their services because this crime is still unsolved all these years later. So in addition to having a homicide, depending on whether the homicide is solved or unsolved, also contributes to how you grieve, the length of time it takes to get to a stability point, and of course the way in which you grieve and how you handle it over a long period of time. I'd like to go into the criminal justice system quite a bit because most of us here at this conference, we know a great deal about the stages of grief, how people grieve. So I want to take a good part of this time to teach you more about the criminal justice system, how it really hinders the grieving process. And so you'll be better equipped to know these things as they come up for your clients and you'll have a better sense of why they are where they are in the grieving process when something like this occurs. The first of all, notification. You can learn about the death of your loved one, the murder of your loved one, in so many different ways, depending, of course, where you are. If you happen to be at home and your child was murdered in, five states away, you have probably a detective from your local area will get that phone call, and someone will either call you with the notification or will show up at your doorstep. I know in New York City, this goes on so many times that there have been notifications of a homicide out of state by phone, which is not a nice way to find out that your child has been killed or a loved one of yours has been murdered. But these are different ways that people have been involved in that. I have learned about this. But also sometimes you'll learn about it in the media. If I had been on the subway going home from work that day 1 hour later than I did, I would have seen someone open up the paper and my potential stepdaughter's picture would have been across from me. I think of that a lot, that I am glad that I did not have that experience. And just to step back a second, how I originally, when my future husband came home at the end of that day to tell me what happened, he handed me the crumpled up paper, and that's how I knew she was dead. Because all he said to me on the phone was, "Mary, this is grave. I'm telling you that this is grave." And even from that phone call, I didn't know what that meant. Did that mean that she was in the hospital, comatose, on life support? Did that mean she was, they were going to do organ transplant, or that she was, I had no idea what was going on with her. And until he found that and it said tragic find on Long Island, that's how I knew she was really dead. So you can't understand the shock and the emotion that comes from such a sudden death. The impact is incredible. But let's get back a second to learning about it on radio and also the crime scene itself. Some people are not at the crime scene, so you don't really get to say goodbye. The first time you really see that person is either if you go to identify the body, which a lot of family members don't do personally. It might be an uncle or an aunt or a different relative who says to you, "Don't worry, I'll go and take care of it." Because you physically have to go down to the morgue and you have to identify that person. Now that can either be done by video. Sometimes they put it on a television screen. Sometimes they give a picture. And of course the worst is when the person's not recognizable any longer and you need to supply dental records or some other, form of identification. Does the person have tattoos? And that's what's happening now in Long Island with the TWA crash.